Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2532. It's 2532. I'm Carol Levine and I am Vice President of NASCA. And tonight is a Q&A type of show where people can call in with questions. And don't feel bashful about calling in with questions, okay? Because we've been where you are and, you know, you can help a lot of people just by asking questions. They can identify with you. This is how we realize that it's okay to speak and maybe be heard, all right, for the first time, really be heard. That's one thing that NASCA is good for, is we offer the platform for people, you know, to come on to tell us stories or to be a part of the panel and whatever they want to do, or just to listen, okay, just to listen, because you can learn so much by that too. And so that's a good thing. Our website, by the way, is excellent. I have to say that it's excellent. It is chock full of all kinds of information, and that's NASCA, NAACA.org, NASCA.org. And it can give you all kinds of information that you might be interested in and maybe even possibly need. I always push the programs. You scroll down a little bit, and you see red bars, red lines, whatever you want to call it. And the very first one speaks about programs. All you have to do is open that program up. That's it. And go down to the United States, because we are worldwide. We're not just the United States. Find your state, click on to it, and it'll give you a plethora, as I say, of programs. It's very simple to do. And then that way you're never alone either, okay? You're never alone when you call into NASCA. We have also, too, a contact page. The contact page, I'm the night owl. I get all kinds of people calling me, sometimes 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and that's fine. That's why I'm the night owl. And so you're never really alone, okay? This is what's important for people to know. Now, tonight we do have, again, it's a Q&A type of program, with a Sylvester, modern, okay, a survivor and professional, and she is here. Her name is Sharon Higdon Jones, and she is a licensed psychotherapist, and she has been for over 35 years. We've had her on before. She's great. She comes on once a month, and she is chock full of information, too, okay? So people, call in. She's right here. But before I bring her on, Sharon, before I bring you on, I am going to read the mission statement, because that's what we have to do. That's what we should do, to give you just a little idea. And this is only a little idea of what NASCA does. We have a single purpose at NASCA, and that is to address issues related to child abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent and physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do so two different ways. One, by educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. And we're starting to really do that. That's good. Presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem, which we already know. Number two, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors. That's what I was talking about, services to survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I'm heavy on the prevention part. It's very, very important. If we would use prevention more and understand what that means exactly, I might do a show some night just on prevention. I think that our children would be safer, and our neighborhoods would be safer. And that, is, to me, is very important about speaking about neighborhoods. Okay, so well, we have a couple of people who have called in. We have Mary Ellen from New York. We have Sharon, the guest, and I'm going to bring her on. We have Lori from Calgary. She's my co-host tonight, too, from Canada, and she's also an ambassador. And ambassadors out there, if you call them once a month, okay, just to be on the panel, okay, that would be very helpful, okay? You will be hearing from me. I've already gotten a hold of a few of them, actually more than a few of them, got a hold of about 20, 25. And we are formulating a new plan, and things will be sent to you, okay? That's what I'm going to say now. But if you just call in once a month, that would be really good. That way people get to know that you're an ambassador, okay? And that makes the program better, too. All right, let me bring on our guest, Sharon. Sharon, I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you. I am very happy to be here, and I'm so glad you brought up the whole issue of asking questions, because I think for everybody who asks a question, there are probably, I don't know, hundreds or maybe thousands of people who have that same question and haven't asked it. So I'm a big proponent of asking questions and certainly of speaking out. And speaking out is also the key to prevention, right? We all know that. If somebody would speak out, if they would, yes. I'm going to encourage that as well as speaking out if you have been, if you are a survivor of any kind of abuse. So I'm delighted to be here. I'm happy to be here. I just looked out the window and our neighbors just flipped a switch and Christmas lights went on. I couldn't believe it.
I know. I know. The people across the street from me, for a week they've had them up already. A week.
Oh, they beat my neighbors. My neighbors went on today, and I thought, oh, my word, am I behind already?
I know. I'm going to put mine up soon, too. I'm celebrating. Yes, I am. I don't care. I'll do it my way.
We have a lot to be thankful for. We have a lot to be thankful for.
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. I'm going to open up Mary Ellen's mic also. But before we actually get into discussions, I just want to say that, yes, COVID is out there. People are scared to death. And they're closing down this and they're closing down that. Now they're closing down the PA, that's the Pennsylvania bridge, into New Jersey and vice versa. And It's good to be, you know, diligent with what we have to do with ourselves, you know, as far as self-care. There's nothing wrong with that. However, we do have to live our lives, too. And that's all I'm going to say on that. I'm not going to say any more because it's not a political show, although I could speak it for 2 hours straight. But, you know, I won't, I promise. But anyway, the point is this. All the stats have gone up. And one thing, I will say this, okay, and then people can call in. I received, the newspapers that go around to your house. I don't know if everybody does that in their counties, but this county does. I'm out in the sticks, and I think this is their only thing that they talk about. But anyway, a couple of weeks ago, now this is important because this has to do with our kids, and that just makes me really, really angry. I'm not going to read this whole article because it's too long, but you'll get the idea. But on October 24, 2003, okay, that's a long time ago now, Collingswood found at what appeared to be a child searching for a meal, and they were doing it in a dumpster, okay? And then they realized that there were four starving boys that were, in other words, five of them. Now, these kids were adopted, and they were supposed to have, the state was supposed to come in and check on the children from time to time. Well, I guess they didn't do a very good job. Now, 17 years later, they actually put forth a child health program. And now they're getting downsized. A total of 67 nurses employed by Rutgers University who were assigned to local child welfare offices and kept tabs on foster care, physical and mental health also, are out of a job as of November 6th. Now, this is a horrific thing. And I don't know why this is happening, but I do know that now there's 67 employees represented by the health professionals and allied employees, local number 1594, said that they were stunned. And the state went through with the job cuts also. So this is very bad for our foster children. And I do worry about kids. When I had lived in a complex in Parsippany, New Jersey, years ago now, I caught a kid eating out of a dumpster. And that's why this has really hit me hard here. And I went over to him, and he was actually stunted because he hadn't been eating. I didn't know he was 17. But he was trying to grab, and it was at Christmas time, Sharon. He was trying to grab, you know, things out of the dumpster, and people were throwing away candy canes. Maybe they're candy canes on the tree from last year or whatever. Who knows what? And he's going to take them home to his family, okay? And anything that looked edible, I guess. I grabbed a hold of that boy, and at first he was frightened of me. And I said to him, I'm going to help you. So I took him to my house because I was running a house on that property of the where that place was. And I don't want to name names. But anyway, the point is I gave him some food that I had in my cupboards and in the refrigerator, whatever, anything I could put together to try to help them. This boy ended up moving into my house a few weeks later with his parents' permission. They had five children, okay, that they were in their care. So, you see, what happens is, I don't know why the states do this. The governors get involved, the mayors get involved, and before you know it, there's less of this and less of that. Now, here we are at Christmas time almost again. Certainly Thanksgiving is coming up. And because of the COVID, we can't be a family. But you know what? There's a lot of people out there that don't even have the means, you know, to be a family where they can even sit and eat a meal together. They don't even have the funding maybe even to have that because they've lost their jobs and everything because of the COVID and the terror in the streets where a lot of stores have been, you know, shut down. Now, people like you, I, and maybe the rest of the people, of course, on the panel, Lori, the whole, everybody, and Mary Ellen, we have our homes, we have our apartments, whatever it might be. We have food in our refrigerator, we have food in our cupboards. And I'm going to start giving to the shelter that I know isn't too far away, even if it's just canned goods and stuff, whatever. I can do that, okay? Because there are so many people out there that are struggling. And, of course, this, of course, affects our children in a very, very negative way. Now, you said we have a lot to be thankful for, and yes, we do, because we're not in that position. But there are a lot of kids out there who are in that position, a lot of families. So, you know, people out there, if your cupboards are full, your refrigerators are full, and you have extra, you have surplus, you know, take it to the shelter. You have shelters around. All you have to do is look up your county and look for shelters and type it in your browser and it'll pop right up and you'll see where the nearest shelter is. Sometimes they use open garages. Sometimes that have been, you know, said to be okay, you know, to the county. And or other times they do have buildings that you can go to and drop things off. Also places like ShopRite. I always use ShopRite because they're very good working with people. I can hang information there about NASCA, but mostly about child abuse in itself. And also, too, they take donations for the needy and for children who are hungry. So there are things out there that we as a society who are maybe in a little better shape, we can help others who are not. And that's important. Okay, that's all I have to say right now. Does anybody want to, you know, have anything to say about that?
Well, the first thing I want to say is thank you for what you have done. And absolutely, we do have a lot to be grateful for, and there are people who are really struggling. Our tummies are full. And, you know, one of the things that we do and that I recommend is sometimes when you go to the grocery store, buy two. You know, whatever it is you're buying, if you can, buy two. And there are food banks and there are shelters and there are food programs and so on. I was amazed one night, and this was a couple of months ago, and they were showing the car. They had opened up a new food bank at one of the churches, and they had expected maybe they would have 50 or 75 people come, and there were blocks and blocks and blocks of cars. Then they were interviewing people as they went along. And, you know, we forget a lot of times people's, you know, incomes have been cut, certainly, or there were dire straits before that, and there is not the money to buy the basics, which is the food. So, yes, I applaud you for what you're doing, Carol. I think all of us can do something. If we do one bag of groceries to a shelter, that can make a difference for a family. It's very sad, and as you were talking about the layoffs and so on, I think we've all experienced, too, with what's going on with the economy, so many layoffs, and we all know the increase in abuse cases, too, at the same time. So it can be overwhelming. We can drown in the news of it, or we can buy two, you know, when we're at the grocery store or to go into our cupboards and to share something, and it can make a difference. And my heart goes out when you paint a picture like you just did, Carol, and made it so personal of the boy going through the dumpsters, you know? And it's not uncommon, you know?
It's not uncommon. It's not.
It breaks my heart, too, when I think of the children. Yeah.
And that's
one way we can
honor
Thanksgiving is to be thankful. Go ahead. I was just going to say the best one way that we can be thankful is by passing it on, you know?
Absolutely.
I'm grateful I have food in my cupboards. I'm grateful my tummy is full. And what can I do to maybe pass that on to somebody else? Yeah.
Absolutely. And you know what? If everyone could give just a little bit, it doesn't have to be a huge amount. I do know that the town of Hackettstown, I saw this in another paper, last week, I guess it was. That may have been through the church, okay? And one whole street in Hackettstown, New Jersey, okay, was filled with paper bags of food. So I guess the church had taken on that mission, and they certainly know how to distribute that food. And you see, this is so important because even the stores now, you know, it's time right now. Again, get out. Get to the stores. You have the money. If you do, get out. Go out and get your toilet paper and all the other things that people take for granted, because the shelves will be bare again. Okay, get soaps and get foods and, you know, soups, even canned soups. It doesn't matter. All right? It doesn't matter what you get, just so long as you get. So you're not in the position, where you're looking at a garbage pail. You know what I'm saying? This is terrible. So I really feel for these people, and since I did go through that, since I did see that, and his parents, they were delighted that I let him move in with me. I would have taken a couple more. I don't care. They're their kids. Because I know what it's like to be hungry, Sharon, okay? Little poor rich girl here, because of the situations in my family, okay, where I was put in situations, and I know what dog biscuits taste like. So when I see people or hear, you know, this, what I just read to you a little bit of the article where five kids in all were going to dumpsters looking for food, this horrifies me. And, yeah, it brings me back to then, you know, when I would sneak downstairs and eat dog biscuits and drink a bottle of soda because that was not counted. They never counted the biscuits. And in those days, Coke was Coke. Okay. I always felt much better when I snuck back up to bed. We'll put it that way. I did, by God. Yes, I did. So, but then all of a sudden they realized that Coke was Coke and all this other stuff. So that's just the way it is. So I'm asking that people, you know, around this time of the year, if you can give something. Even if you know, for God's sake, if you know people down the street who are elderly or to those that are really, really poor, just drop some food off on that porch. You don't have to knock on the door and bother them. I mean, you knock so they know you're there, but, you know, and just walk away. And you've done a good thing. You've done a damn good thing. We have another guest here. This is Pamela from Louisiana.
Hey.
Yes. Hey, how you doing there, honey? How you doing?
I'm doing great, Carol. Great to talk to
That's
you
That's good.
Again.
Well, I'm glad that you're here. And we're talking. You've been here for a few seconds here. I can see this for a few minutes. Yeah. I think we've all know of people in our neighborhoods who could use a little help, you know. And if we just go through our closets, you know, and see things that we're not, we look at it because we have what we need. So we look at it and go, nah, you know, and never, you know, look at the dates on the cans, make sure they're good, you know. But just put a package together, you know, and take it to someone's house. And what a good thing to do. You know, what a good thing to do.
Yeah, I think Goodwill does a good job at getting things out to people. You know, I started to kind of be a little upset that they charge, but then I realized they employ people, and that's the money that they use to pay the people. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So,
yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So.
And I understand what you're saying, too. I understand.
Yeah,
and maybe that's even why more. Pamela, maybe that's even why more. And Pamela is an ambassador, by the way. Thank you for calling in for Louisiana. But anyway, you know, maybe that's why it's even more important that those of us, you know, who can give a little bit, it was just one bagful, for God's sake, you know.
Right.
You know, then that's they get a little bit more food that way, you know, and that's
right.
That's good. Yeah, yeah.
So
anybody have a... Go ahead.
At our grocery stores, they have bins with already packaged non-perishable foods that we can just go up and grab one and just pay it at the register when we're cashing out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have to go shop for it. It's all in one bag. And when we purchase it, you know, we put it in a bin on the way out, and then our grocery store gives it out to the people in need in the community.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I think I saw that in one of the stores. Is that like a $10 bag or something?
Right.
I have seen that also. And I had already given money at the register, so I didn't worry about it. My daughter got the $10 bag, and I gave money. Okay, so... But if we can do these things, this is, you know, very, very, very helpful. Very helpful. So,
and I'd like
now
to add, I'd like to add
out
something.
Of the way.
Oh.
Go
wait,
ahead.
Wait, we're not finished. Somebody was talking about going through their closet, too, and their cupboards. And also, this is the time when the temperatures are going down, too. And one of the things that we always do is we go through our closets, too, to get, you know, sweaters, jackets, things that we're not wearing, and we take them to homeless shelters, too. So it's really important. There are a lot of people who are cold out there, too. And you know about that, Carol, but there's a lot of people who are cold out there, too. So, you know, if we can...
Yes.
We usually do it. We usually actually we don't go to the shelters. We actually go to a homeless encampment and we pass out. You know, if we have something or we gather them up in the neighborhood. So that can be very helpful too. You know, we all
and that's a very good point
that we're not wearing. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. That's a very very good point. About close to a month ago, I gave this lady a huge amount of clothing because at one time I was heavier. Now I'm not that heavy anymore. Thank you. You know, I also shrunk an inch. That pissed me off, but we won't talk about that. But anyway, I had all these really nice clothing, you know, and she is just so delighted. You see the smiles come on the people's faces, and this is, it warms your heart, okay?
Yes.
So whether you do it on a personal level or whether you do it, you know, by taking it someplace like at a church, a lot of times church, you know, distribute, you know, clothing also. And it's so, so, so important. This is speaking like about community. Community to me is very, very important. And so many of us who live more, say, in the urban area, I'm not there now. Now I'm dodging bears and coyotes. Like I'm telling you, I'm in the woods, you know, and I don't know which is worse at this point. But, you know, I don't know. I can't let my cat out, for God's sake. She'll get eaten. That's just, you know, she'll be a tidbit for someone or something, rather than not someone. But anyway, you know, the point is, if we can all just do a little bit, we've done a lot.
Carol, I want to talk something about giving food donations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Never struck me, but I heard this recently, and I thought, why don't you think of that more often? So you know how you go grocery shopping, sometimes the stores run specials, buy one, get one free?
Right.
And you think, well,
that's right.
I didn't need to. No, you didn't need to. But if you buy one, get one free, you can give that, and it's not costing you anything.
I like that. That's right. That's a good idea.
If you just keep it that thought in mind, you know, you might pass it up thinking you didn't really need to, but you can always give it to someone who does need it, and it really didn't cost you nothing. I thought that was
I like
really
that idea.
I looking at it. You know, sometimes you can't.
Well, in those newspapers, I'm having a hard time hearing. I don't know, honestly, God, I don't know if it's my phone or what it is. But when the newspapers come around, they always have the ads in there. And I'll bet you that's where you can find coupons, and it will say buy one, get one free. I'm going to start looking. I like that idea. Yeah, good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I also wanted to say about the Christmas lights. I've been hearing people say that it's lifting their spirits. And so when they've seen them and they've thought, oh, that looks so beautiful, I'm going to go home and do the same thing for someone else to see. So when you were mentioning Christmas lights, I was thinking about what I've heard people commenting on. It is early, but it's really beautiful, and right now we just need something positive.
Yes, we do. We absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And, Sharon, she was talking about that before.
I thought it was so auspicious. I was just saying that I thought it was so auspicious. Just as I came in and was turning on my computer and so on to call in tonight, and I just was going to over to close the shutters on my window, and all of a sudden these lights went on. It was like, hello. It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. We need that beauty. We need to remember, you know, what we have to be thankful for, and we need to remember the beauty of the season and all these things. We all need a lift. And so many times we talk about the scarcity, either in our past lives or our current lives, and it's also nice to remember the abundance, you know? And I think the lights are like that. You know, how can you feel down when you're looking out and somebody's house has got, you know, green and red and yellow and all these lights, and they have a big sheet sign that's all lit up on their front porch, and it's nice. You tell us
that you it is such a nice thing. It's such a good thing, and we need that in our lives right now because there's so many things that are happening, you know, that are negative. And so to have something pretty to look at, I think it helps us spiritually, mentally, and emotionally because it does lift us up, absolutely. So I thought the guy across the street was nuts. Go ahead.
I just told my husband, go get my Christmas tree. It's about 2 feet. It's got all white branches, and it's got a snowman head on it that lights up. And I just told my husband, please go get that. Well, I didn't know he was going to have so many wires to deal with that it was going to frustrate the heck out of him.
Well, you know, it's going to lift your spirits, yes.
Mm-hmm. He's retired in about 3 weeks, so I've been, just doing things to him, you know, teasing him a lot to show him what he's going to have to deal with when he's home. That's funny. Hey, y'all want to hear from a male? Come here. Get over here, honey. Come here. Come say hey. Come on. Say hey to the group.
Hello.
Hey, how you doing?
Oh, fine. How about you guys?
Well, your wifey has
doing
some
great
plans for you, and I'll make you happy.
Yeah, already got honeydews on the list.
Oh, this is just the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
I can imagine. But it's all good.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, yeah. I just wanted to say the NASCO is a very good place to be, and I think you guys are doing great work.
And, thank you so much.
I stand behind Pamela, and we've been married 37 years, and so I know her story real good, and I'm just sad that many people are going through that, and it's not finished yet, but you guys keep putting a dent in it. And keep doing the good work.
Well, you know what? We're never going to totally get away, you know, and get child abuse out of the way. There's no such thing as that. But we can put that dent in that and in the statistics. And our voices are getting out there more now. They absolutely are. And, you know, next month is for the men in December. I don't like to say that we celebrate because it's not a celebration, not for any of us, all right? But we bring forth awareness, you know, for the guys who have been abused and men out there. You're listening. I know there's people listening right now. Let me say something to you. You're right on the cusp, I'm going to use the word cusp, of wanting to call in, you know. And when December comes, think about it, because you're no different than we gals are when it comes to the feelings, whether it be emotional, mental. When you've gone through, you know, trauma, when you've been abused, there goes my other cell phone, good God. I'm going to hide it. That's what I did last time. I hid it. I still could hear from the other room. Go away. All right. So, but the point is this. You know, you can come on the show. Listen first. Listen to NASCA. Do as what he's saying. Listen to NASCA, and you'll see that this is a comfortable platform, you know, to come on if you, you know, have the desire to tell your story. And let me tell you something. You tell your story, and you, such a load comes off your chest. It just it simply does. And you're not alone at NASCA. And like he said, which is so true, you know, we have the contact page. You can call in. You can listen in. You can listen on your computers like you're doing now. You can go to the archives. And certainly get to know the website. I say this to everyone. Get to know the website because there's a lot of help there, too. So thank you so much for those kind words. We really appreciate that.
You're welcome. You guys take care.
You bet. You too.
Thank you.
And let's hear it for the partners too, you know, for the partners of survivors too, who do so much to help and heal and support, you know.
Well, my husband has a different take on abuse, okay? His mother was so smothering of him, I'm telling you. She smothered her children like crazy. I mean, she would go through their stuff. She would try to make women come into their lives. I mean, she just would not let them go. And he has a lot of trauma from that because he didn't even want to talk to his mother anymore when I first met him. I was like, you're talking to your mother, okay? So anyway, you know, he has some, I want to say, some anxiety behind that and some memories behind that. So I think that's something he needs to talk about, you know? I mean, he wasn't sexually or physically abused, but he was emotionally abused. You know, he couldn't be his own person. His mother was trying to live his life for him.
Oh,
has anyone ever heard of that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, I have. Yeah. And it's more than just being a mama's boy, okay? That's a little bit controlling on the mother part. And because she wants, and I'm not saying it's out of lack of love or anything like that. Sometimes mothers, like you say, are into every part of their life because, number one, maybe, just maybe, there's something in their life that we don't understand, and that's made them so overprotective of their own children because it may be something that they know of or had gone through themselves. That can happen. And then other times it's because they are just that way. And I've worked with people where I had to tell, you know, the mother or the father, both of them sometimes, you know, you have to let your children go and let them make their own mistakes because they're going to, and, you know, and learn to grow up. You know, your job isn't done ever. You can always look over
well,
them.
His mother was very bitter and angry because her mother controlled her and wouldn't let her do her dreams. She wanted to be a model, and she was beautiful. This woman was absolutely stunning, and she wanted to be a model, and her mother said, nope, you're not going to do it, and that just, it just crushed her, you know?
Absolutely.
And so I think that parenting skill came down to her, okay? So now she doesn't know any other way to parent than the way she was shown, right? So that, I think, came down through her to her boys, especially Mark, since he was the first one, okay? And, you know, he just couldn't live his life. I know one time there was this girl that liked Mark, and she was trying to set him up. And the girl was, like, stalking him. And, I mean, this was in what grade, huh?
Mm-hmm.
In college, no less. And the girl penciled him a pillow or something.
Oh, my God.
I know. Well, he was a basketball player. He didn't want anything to do with girls. He loved basketball, okay? He played 4 years of college basketball up in Clarion near Pittsburgh. He was born in Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
He's
mm-hmm.
a snowbird. Mm-hmm. He came down here to Louisiana from Pittsburgh. So we call them snowbirds when they come down here.
I'm sure he likes Louisiana better than Pittsburgh. I could be wrong. A lot of things are happening there right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, listen here. We have an 804 area code number, and I should probably know that. I have to get a list because there's so many people that do call in. All right, who am I speaking to? 804.
This is Ashley Roberts. I am just tuning in for the first time, actually. I am from Richmond, Virginia, originally, which is 804, but I live in Charleston, South Carolina, so I just have the same old number.
Oh, well, welcome to the NASCA show. Welcome. We always like when new people call in. And, you know, tonight is a night where people can call in. I'm going to give out the phone number. It's 646-595-2118. You obviously know it. But 646-595-2118. And if you have any questions on your mind, you know, something that's bothering you, we do have a trained professional here, and she's a licensed psychotherapist, and she has been for 35 years. And if you have something on your mind that you want to or need to have addressed, you are among friends. We're all survivors here. I don't know if our newest caller is, but, you know, we're survivors here. And there isn't anything we haven't been through, okay?
Yeah.
And we're here for you.
Thank you so much, and same to y'all. I'm really just listening in tonight. I've meant to chime in on several different calls. I think I did back in the day because I used to do some work in the field, but I am also a survivor. And so I think I did back in the day, but it's been a long time, and I just happened to be scrolling through Instagram and was like, you know what, let me chime in and see what's going on and just listen in. So thank you for welcoming me, and it's always great to meet new friends who unfortunately we're all part of the same club that none of us wish to be a part of, but at least we have each other. So thanks for welcoming me, and I am here for everyone as well.
Amen. No, that's good. That's great.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yes, that's wonderful. See, that's one thing about NASCA is we're here for everyone. That's why we have the contact list on the night owl. You can call me 2 o'clock in the morning if you want. I don't care. I'm up anyway, you know. And, I am. I got to bed at 6:30 in the morning the other day, you know.
Oh, you sound like you have my schedule.
Yes, well, I used to work, the graveyard shift, they used to call it, yeah. And that was in detox centers and other type of centers that I've worked in. So I'm used to that shift, and I never really quite got out of it. I could never go to bed at 9 o'clock at night and go to sleep. Forget about it. It's not going to happen, okay? So I might as well working, you know, the hours that I'm comfortable with. So I stay up all night, and I do receive a lot of phone calls. I want to tell you this. I receive a lot of phone calls, and sometimes that's when the men come forward. They call at 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I can be on as long as 2-3 hours with some people if they need it, okay? And sometimes if you hear my voice, it can be very scratchy. It means I've been talking too much, all right? So, you know that's why. But NASCA does offer an awful lot of things for people. Other shows, a lot of times you'll get a recording. Even with some of the centers that we deal with, you can get a recording, and that's not good enough. You need people in the AM because people suffer from nightmares. They suffer from flashbacks, all kinds of PTSD. It can be, complex PTSD, which I had. It can be all different kinds of things, panic attacks, you name it. And what we're finding out now during this terrible time that we're going through is that people's, whatever they are suffering from, is just tenfold, okay? Because they're very frightened, you know, they're very scared, and they don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. And they don't have the tools, maybe, to handle, what it is that they are dealing with. Now, our guest tonight, Sharon Higdon Jones, she has written a book, and it's called Healing Steps, and that is a gentle path to recovery for survivors of childhood sexual abuse. Now, I like books like this, I said the last time that I was on with Sharon, because when people, you know, are awake at 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, whatever, they can call me or they can open up her book, okay? It gives you tools, you know, to work with. You need something. You need something to grab onto when you're alone or, you know, even if you're not alone, whatever the point is, you need something to grab onto to help you get you through that night and through that fright that maybe you're suffering from. And so, Sharon, why don't you talk a little bit about your book? That would be good if you did that.
Thank you. Thank you, Kira. And, you know, it's true about a book. I know when I went through my own healing, and Ashley, welcome. I'm a survivor as well as being a therapist. And when I was going through my own healing, one of the things that was so helpful was to have something next to my bed at night for exactly what you're talking about, because the night, you know, I think all of us who've gone through our own processes of healing have found that the nights can be pretty rough, and the nightmares happen, the flashbacks happen, as you mentioned. And I didn't want to call anybody. I didn't know Carol at that time. If I had known you back in the late 70s, Carol, I may have called you knowing that you were
late. That
would have
been fine. That would have been fine.
I didn't know anybody then. But what I did have was I kept a journal next to my bed, and I kept some exercises. So one of the reasons that I did write the book, one of the main reasons I wrote it is I did workshops for women who had been abused for over 20 years, and obviously saw clients individually, men and women. And thank you so much for bringing up about men, Carol, because I think that men are oftentimes reluctant to talk about the abuse. And there's a lot of reasons for that. We don't need to go into that now. But I am so glad that you're going to have a focus on that, because I don't think I ever had a man who came into counseling or therapy with me who didn't say, why didn't I do this years ago? And the answer was always, because you weren't ready to do it. When you're ready to do it, you know, you found the courage to do it. But I'm so glad you're going to be focusing on men. But anyway, back to my book. So as a result of doing the workshops, we did all kinds of different ways of helping to soothe and heal and to even move people through the various stages of healing. And I took from that, because each time I did a workshop, I learned something more because of the women who were involved, and there was so much to learn from them, and came up with a final kind of format that really did worked to take people gently through, to share experiences of other women. And when it was time for me to stop doing the workshops, because I keep thinking about retiring, and I decided to stop doing them because they never ended. There were supposed to be 7 of them, and they just never ended. They would go on. I thought, there's some valuable pieces in here that can really help people and can support people, educate people, share with some women, other women who have gone through probably the same struggles that they're having, because we all have them. I've certainly had them. And so I decided to put them in a book format that you can open at any point. You can go through the book step by step. Or you can open it and say, God, I'm just having problems in my relationship right now. I know it can't possibly be me, but maybe there's something that I could learn about relationships. And there's a whole section about relationships, what makes a good relationship. There's exercises. There's, you know, people's stories, which I think are one of the most valuable things in the book. I was so fortunate as I was writing the book, I would remember, 6 years ago, there was a woman there that really moved me when she had a story. There was one that had to do with abuse by her mother. And abuse by mother, you know, in terms of sexual abuse, and that's what the book is really focusing on, although it can cover all kinds of abuse, is not that common. I thought about her, and I gave her a call and said, I'm writing a book. Your story was so powerful. And it went on to, what's important is not just what happened then, but how it goes on to affect us now, right? We all know that. You know, if you've been abused in the past, it's going to affect your life, and it's going to bring up circumstances that are going to invite you to heal and to grow. And we look at that and say, oh, my God, why is this happening again? I keep finding the same alcoholic man, or I keep finding the same circumstance at work. And that's because there's always that calling for us to confront whatever it is and to work through it and to heal it. So I would, going back to that story, so I would call like this particular woman and said, would you mind if sharing your story? And I have to tell you, 100% of the time when I would do that, the women, not only did they share their stories, occasionally they would ask me to tell it, but most of the time I said, if you could tell it, it's so much more meaningful. They would tell it in a way that that I wouldn't have told it, because it came from their own deep experience. And those stories are in the book, and I think that we can all relate to them. Even though the circumstances may have been different, we can relate to the feelings that they had, because it's, you know, it's universal for all of us. So the book is really meant for people not to feel alone, to know that there is hope and healing, but it also provides exercises, because so many times people will say to you, so they've said to me, well, you need to talk to a counselor about that, or, you know, you need to work on that. You know, you really should journal. Well, you know, that's really, those are big topics. What does that mean? And in the book, it'll say, it would be helpful at this time to A, B, or C. And there's visualizations, there's art projects, there's writing exercises, there's lots of things that you can do. They also tell you about, you know, what to look out for, what the dangers are. They talk about the flashbacks coming up and what to do and how to reach out and what to share and what not to share. They address questions, should you confront, should you not confront the abuser? What are the pros and cons? What are other people's experiences? What about forgiveness? Where does that, you know, what about relationships? What about sex? There's a large section of the book about sexuality. Does abuse, does it affect your sexuality? How do you know if it does or doesn't? What do you do about it? So I've tried to make it as complete as I could without being overwhelming. There's some humor in it. There's some art in it. There's some poetry in it. So my goal is to say, for a lot of people, we can't afford therapy, or we not all of us have access to Carol at 2:00 in the morning. And this is the next best thing. We know that she's the best thing, but this is the next best thing. And it's also, I want to say, during holiday time, and I had somebody call me about this the other day, and it's why it's fresh in my mind, and she said to me that one of her best friends had been abused as a child and was just starting to work through some of the things. And she said, would it be appropriate for me to give give her your book for Christmas? And I said, absolutely. I said, you know, write a little note in the front just saying, I'm here with love and support for you. You know, I can listen if you want to talk, but in the meantime, you know, maybe this could be helpful. Because when people have a book, they can, you know, you can stick it in your closet, you can pull it out when you need to, you can have it in access, and it's another way of saying, I love you, I care about you, and I'm supporting you. I don't know what to say or do, maybe this can help. So, you know, that's another idea. I hadn't thought about that until she called and asked me about that, and I thought about, you know, would it be appropriate to give, and I think so.
Absolutely.
And the cover is not threatening. It doesn't have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Jones,
I was just going to say, Ashley, is that you? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is Ashley. I was just going to chime in on what you were saying about the book. I know firsthand that it is often helpful to give someone a book for someone to give you a book versus going out to the store and having that, I guess, that woe is me mentality, man, I really wish I didn't have to spend my money on buying a book all because of what happened to me in my past. Whereas it's like if someone gives you a book, it's more of an uplifting type experience. Like someone cares, someone's looking out for me versus that, like, it's almost shameful to some people that I've heard that I've worked with in the past to go to the bookstore or go to the library and check out a book of that sort. So it is a great gift, I think, and then to put a little heartfelt message in. It shows that someone actually took the time to care about, you know, them as a person. So I just think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Jones?
Yeah, I agree with you. Okay. When I was getting, I went to have an eye exam when I was writing the book, and when the gal was fitting me with glasses, and I said, she said, well, what are you looking for? And I said, well, I need some glasses. I want to look like an author or something. So she was laughing. She said, oh, are you writing something? And I said, I am. And she asked her what I was writing, and I told her. And all of a sudden, she had that look, right? And a tear came up in her eye, and she said, you're writing a book about that? And I said, I am. And I said to her, well, I'd be more than happy to let you know if it's going to be published or what's going to happen. And she said, well, I would appreciate that. And so when the book was published, I'd ordered a few copies to give to people who have been supportive and so through this process. And I decided to take her book, and I took it into the shop and handed it to her, and she started to cry, and she said, nobody has ever reached out to me before.
Oh, my goodness.
So, you know.
So you know what's so wonderful about these?
That message.
Mm-hmm. You know what's so wonderful about the books that we write, okay? Like, mine is over in libraries and, in certain sections of the libraries, and they use it, you know, the professors use it, to help teach about child abuse, because maybe they're going to become a social worker. They have people like us, we right here on this panel, they allow into the universities. Of course, we can't do this right now because of the COVID. But up until then, when that became a problem, they would have people like us come in because we were the mouth. We were the living person. We were there.
Yes.
We were there. And then still, in all, though, I would always, even with book signings, I would always leave behind a few copies to put into their library so that people could grab them. It could be there. It could be at their disposal. So to give it as a gift, I think, is a very good idea, because there are so many of us out there who are survivors of child abuse. Let's face it.
Yes.
Okay? And we all need help. We all need help. You know, we get on to our healing journey. I've been on mine for many, many years. I can honestly say I'm at the point in my life where I am, as Bill says, comfortable in my own skin. But it took me a long time to get there. We all differ. We are all different people, okay? Stories might be different, absolutely. I know all about the bad parts of life. And it took me a long time to heal, to get out of complex, you know, PTSD and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's gone, and I'm free. I'm free. Mm-hmm. And what a wonderful feeling it is. You know, it's a wonderful feeling, and I'm giving this as hope to those of the people out there who are listening who may feel stuck. We speak about this at times, stuck. They get so far in their healing journey, and then they can't go any further because they don't know what to do. I can honestly tell you that you can move forward. And if you have tools to work with, whether it be a book, or if it's a trusted counselor, or a therapist, or a psychiatrist, and it doesn't matter who it is, okay? You know, it doesn't matter who it is, but go to that person, call that person, or go to them, make appointments. And another thing, one thing about the programs on our website, if you don't have insurance, okay, say you're from New Jersey, which I'm from right now. I haven't always been from New Jersey. I was born in New York. But the point is this. In New Jersey, I know that they have all different kinds of programs, and every once in a while it'll say, you know, it's free or maybe a small nominal type of, you know, amount of money instead of, you know, a whole bunch of money that you might have to pay out. So there are programs that way too, and I want people to remember that. But I do encourage you to get her book. Okay, that's really important. Healing Steps, A Gentle Path to Recovery for Survivors of Childhood Sexual Abuse. And this is by Sharon Higdon Jones. And the reason why I do that is because, okay, you just heard me get rid of my cell phone. I'm on this phone, I'm on a landline, and my cell phone's ringing too. So, and there's only one of me. So, I mean, it's good to have... I think there's only one of me, but anyway, we won't go there. But it's good to have a book. It's good to have a book, something that you can hold, okay? Something you can open up and look at. I'm encouraging people. I wrote my memoirs, and it was horrifying. I had one company say they couldn't handle my book, and because it was too terrifying. And I said, well, you didn't live it. I did. And they said, we still can't handle it. You know, so they had me made a trailer of it, $1,400. Thank you very much. And they did give it back to me, the $1,400. And, but, you know, you read a book, it's wonderful to know that there's other people out there that have gone through what maybe you've gone through. You can identify, you know, with certain things. And that's helpful. But what we need to heal is tools. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Tools. Yeah. So, you know, absolutely do that. The next book I write might be a horror book, but that's another story. Go ahead.
I'm writing a novel
right now.
Yeah. Who is this, Mary Ellen? I'm going to go up
This is Pamela.
Oh, Pamela. Okay, go ahead. All right, we're skipping around a little bit here, but that's okay. Go ahead.
Well, I'm so my soapbox about people that are abused, that are vulnerable. There are so many therapists out there, and I'm looking at the section of Dr. Jones' book here under the title Therapy, and she talks about having been referred to physicians and friends and finding the right therapist. I'm telling you, think about it. How do you find the right therapist? And she has a section in here that tells you how to do that, and it's spot on, okay?
Good.
And she talks about if therapy's too costly, you can go to support groups, okay? Like NASCA's a support group, right? You got your YMCA and different other things. And also, you know, with insurance. But I just love that part that she put in there because that's so, I mean, if you don't have the right therapist, I'm telling you, it's just horrible. It's like being re-victimized again, you know?
Yes.
Oh, for sure.
Well, you don't
this
get
is
anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Well, people don't get anywhere if they don't find the right therapist. You know, it's wasting people's time, and they're not going to get the help that they need. Thank you for that. Kind of skipping over here. I want to get kind of like an order here so that everyone has a chance. Okay. Mary Ellen from New York, do you have a question or a comment you'd like to make?
I do. I was thinking, this has reminded me recently in my therapy with my therapist, we were talking about careers, because I've been thinking about changing careers, and she keeps saying, well, aren't you ready to start looking to retirement? I'm like, no, I want to do something really fulfilling. And she said, well, what would that be? I said, I want to learn to be a public speaker, and I want to tell my story. Well, she asked, what would you speak about? And I said, I want to tell my story. And she just looked at me, and she goes, well, I would advise against that. And I said, why is that? And she said, well, there's a lot of emotion tied to your story, and I think that you need to heal, maybe a couple years of healing before you would do that. Well, I'll tell you, that conversation hasn't left me, because I feel like, wait a minute, you know, these feelings are not going to go away. My story is not going to change, and I've carried these emotions for 60 years, and now that I've finally got to a spot where I'm talking about what happened, and I'm reaching out and sharing and feeling that this is not on me. You know, I used to be shamed. I'm no longer feeling shameful, because I know that is not on me. It's what happened to me. It's not who I am. And I've really been bothered by the conversation and wondered, what's your thoughts on this?
I'm wondering whose concerns she's dealing with. I mean, is she concerned that it's going to be too overwhelming for you and you're going to drown in the emotion and you won't be able to handle it? Is that what she's concerned about? Because, you know, you're right. I mean, I don't know of any of us who, when we are talking about our story, it's connected, right, to our own experience. It's connected to our emotions, right? Sometimes they're rawer than at other times. But, of course, there's no way we can separate them, nor do we want to, because that's how we heal, is by incorporating all of that. So the only thing that I can imagine, obviously I cannot read her mind or know, is that if there's concern that you might drown in your experience that you don't have at this time, you know, the ego strength to be able to tell your story but stay distant enough so that you're not reliving it at that moment and become overwhelmed. That's the only thing I can imagine. I mean, is that a possibility?
Well, possibly. One of the things she said was that it's too emotional, or that I may go to extremes and be disconnected. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know what to think about that. I know that there has been, I mean, yeah, it is very emotional.
Mm-hmm.
But I think part of healing is sharing and speaking
mm-hmm.
about it and not holding it in and feeling
yeah.
accepted to be able to speak about it.
That's right.
I think
Lori in Canada.
I think that
yeah,
there
I'll
are
want
two
to get
possibilities.
Lori in there too.
Mm-hmm. Let me just say this one thing, and then I'll, you know, absolutely want to hear what Lori has to say. I think there's two possibilities.
Yeah.
I mean, on extremes. One is that you will become very disconnected, and maybe then, you know, that will be frozen somehow, so that you are distant from it, with the idea of saying, well, I need to be distant from it because I need to be able to present so other people can hear. And the other one is you're overwhelmed. But you're not going to know that until you do that, right? The big question really is, will you, you know, are you able to take care of yourself should one or the other happen? If you become disconnected from it, do you trust her enough to say, you know, I think you're becoming disconnected, we need to go back and get back into it again, or can you take care of it if you become overwhelmed? If the answer to that question is, I can handle whichever it is, I am willing to look at that and I know what to do or where to come, if that should occur, then I say it's a green light. but that's just my opinion. So, and I don't know you that well, but that's what I would say. You have to be equipped to deal with whatever occurs should you decide to go public with your story, right? And we all know that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not like people that are listening to you to be taking care of you really in that moment. So you just have to know that you're, yeah, I can become overwhelmed and I can become disconnected and I can deal with either one of those should they occur.
Yeah. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Now let's go to Lori.
Your therapist. Yeah, I mean,
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I really think what Sharon said there is really good. And I know because I went when I started going public with my story back in 2009, you know, I wasn't under the care of a therapist or anything, and I just did it on my own. I was in a group support type situation, but nobody knew that I was going to go public with my story. But I just really thought about it before I did it because of the repercussions, I thought, what worst case scenario, you know, what's going to happen if I do go public with this? And because I wanted to be a public speaker too. And you might, you know, have my story out there for people to see it and really be public and very vocal. And I thought, well, I weighed it out and I really thought about it before I did it. And then I started getting busy and I realized, like, it's exactly what I needed to do. But I did weigh it out very carefully first to make sure, you know, that I was okay enough to do it, safe enough, because it was a bit nerve-wracking at first. Pretty much like the first 6 months was a bit of a struggle. I was nervous and, you know, uptight about speaking publicly about my story. And then I became very comfortable about it and completely okay with it after that. So it was just a bit of nerves at first. But I had a good friend who was a psychotherapist who was there. She's just a friend of mine, but she used to practice psychotherapy and she was there as a friend, like a support long distance in Australia, but she would call and talk to me and make sure I was okay. And through, you know, so I wasn't really alone. I did have somebody to talk to. And I think, you know, we know, I mean, we go to therapists or we might go to therapists for help, but we really, we have to know ourselves best. You know what I mean? So I would say, you know, once you've weighed it all out and just, you know, thought about, you know, are you strong enough to do it? And can you handle that? You know, anything that might come from it, I would say go for it. Yeah.
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 I agree with
that.
Well,
thank you. Thank you for your thoughts. Yeah. I appreciate all of you sharing.
Let me say something about this, too. Now, this is Miss Panic Child here. I had so much panic, I used to carry a flask of booze in my back of my pocket. And you know how they used to go around the classroom and you'd have to start reading out loud? Well, I was one of those that didn't want to read out loud. So I'd go to the ladies' room about four seats before me, and I'd take my flask with me, and I'd go glug, glug, glug. And then I'd go back in. And by the time it got to me, I'd get up there and I'd do just fine, okay? So that's not the way to handle it, okay? I'm just letting you know what I did. So I did get over my panic, okay? It started at the age of 9, and it lasted until 49. And when I got over all of that, and my parents had, my mother and my stepfather had passed away. I actually started writing my book when my stepfather was still alive. I just started to. It only took me 28 days to write my book, okay? That's it. And it was because I had the passion, the drive. I know me. And I decided I'm going to do this. And the last of my few panic attacks, I cursed at them. That's how I handle things at times. I do it in my head. Don't worry about it. And I got over my panic attacks. And I said, the drive to want to teach people or to educate people was so strong in me that that I wanted to write this book. And I did it. And I wrote my book, and then I started small. There's women's groups you can go before. Okay,
right.
Like each town, a lot of times they have a woman's group, you know what I'm saying? And you can contact them, and you can be like the guest speaker for the night. in order to teach them about child abuse, you see. This is where you can get NASCA paperwork and make copies. This is what I used to do, and I still do. I make copies of the flags, the red flags of child abuse, you know, what, and also anything that I think that might be appropriate, you know, for people to hear. What age, what's the appropriate age to start teaching your children about what's boundaries, what's right and what's not right as far as inappropriate behavior from adults or older teenagers, okay? Because they know by the time they're 15 years old that they're different. And they will continue to be with their peers, but they're thinking in their mind that they wish that they had the little seven-year-old down the street. That's just the way it is, okay? So I wanted people to, I wanted to teach people what I had learned over the years, either it was through my own personal experience or through jobs and schooling and all this other stuff. I wanted them to learn so that, you know, to help, so kids wouldn't go through what we go through. We can only make a little dent. I can only make a tiny dent. But if we all put the dents together, we have a big dent, okay? This is the way I look at it. So, you know, if you feel in your gut, okay, really be honest with yourself. If you feel in your gut that you're at the point of your healing, okay, where you can stand and speak to people about this, do it. That's my – I agree with Lori because I believe – and I understand what Sharon's saying also. Some like people, maybe they're not quite ready. They'll get up there and all of a sudden they crash. You know what I'm saying? But if you feel in your heart that you can get up there and do it, then go for it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yes. And the only way you're going to know is by doing it. You know, because I think we can all have ideas about how it's going to be for us. And, but we don't know. And when I first did an internship at a sexual abuse treatment program back in 1979, that shows you how old I am, and it was very rare, and it was an experimental program and so on, and I'd go through this very stringent interview process for the internship, and when they said the first night I would be going, they said there, because you had to be able to work with perpetrators as well as survivors and family members and so on, children, adults, teens, and so on. And they said, so the first time we want you to come to see if it's right for you, there'll be some perpetrators. Are you okay with that? So feeling very brave and full of myself, right, because then I had, you know, degrees and all this. I said, oh, absolutely. And I walked into a room with 200 perpetrators. And I went, oh, my God. And it's full of anxiety and fear and, you know, things dancing in my head. And I remember going home that night and putting a call in for my therapist the next day and saying, I think, because I told him, I said, I'm feeling really pretty good and pretty solid right now, you know, with my healing. I think I can go ahead and do this. I said, I think I need to resume my appointments through this because, oh, my God. So, you know, you don't know, and I was able to do it, and it was, it's, and having those feelings, by the way, is very normal. I mean, who amongst us, right? And when I thought about it afterwards, I thought, oh, my God, I should have been able to handle my anxiety. I should have felt more comfortable. And I thought, who's going to feel comfortable walking into a room of 200 perpetrators standing up and telling their stories?
Right.
Right? Which is, was a little different than the survivor stories. Many of them were arrogance and excuses and so on, and we sat there because they were in the initial stages of treatment, bless our hearts, and they were in the initial treatment, so it was a tough night. So, but that's when I learned, okay, you can go do this, but get the support that you need or may need.
Right,
you know,
have your tools.
One of you mentioned having a friend in Australia that would call and check in just to say, how are you doing with this? Or having a counselor or a therapist or, you know, other members of people in NASCA, you know, to say, how am I doing here, you know? Because it will bring up stuff, and that's okay. That's okay.
Right? Yeah.
That's our commitment. Our commitment is to the journey, regardless of what it brings up. And whatever the next step is, it is, in your case, it's going to do some public speaking and tell your story. That's the next step for you, it sounds like. And whatever that step is that we intuitively know, and one of you had said, you know, we know, our therapist may know something, but we know ourselves very well what we need to do. When you have that inkling, then what you're saying is, am I willing to do whatever this brings up? I'm willing to heal whatever it is. And it's a good thing.
Right.
It's a good thing. I hope you have the opportunity to face some emotions. I hope you have the opportunity to face some anxiety. You know, that you're just going to be stronger and further along the journey toward of recovery. So,
thank
welcome
you.
It.
Yeah.
Embrace it. Yeah.
Well, I think it's...
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think it's empowering to be able to freely speak about your experiences and your healing.
It gives hope to others, and it also provides an invitation for others. You know, when somebody is hearing you speak, you know whoever you're speaking to. We know what the numbers are. So you know that 1 out of every 4 women and 1 out of every 6 men is in terms of sexual abuse, and obviously the numbers are high for other kinds of abuse, are listening to you, and they're looking at you, and they're saying, oh, my God, she's coming forth and telling her story. And you're going to touch the people that need to be touched in that room. It's an invitation for them. It's an invitation to begin their own journey if they haven't, or to continue if they have. And good for you. Good for you.
And it is our willingness to be vulnerable that opens us up to others who need to have someone to reach out and share with, correct?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, absolutely. And we should never be ashamed of our own vulnerability or our own emotional response that we may have while we're giving a talk or presenting information or sharing with anybody, because that's part of the package, right? It's part of the package.
Absolutely. That's exactly, this is Ashley again, and I apologize for interrupting, but I have to go in 1 second. And I just wanted to say this to, I guess, to piggyback on what y'all are talking about, is I remember one of the very first times I told my story. Well, let me take that back. I'd probably told it 20 times before, but it was like my first one in front of hundreds of people. And I would preface each time that I went up to speak with, I'm nervous. This is, you know, I'm about to tell you my life story. I'm proud to be here, but I'm nervous. This is my life that I'm opening up to you, and thank you for, you know, allowing me to speak, blah, blah, blah. But I was just straight up real with them and kind of gave that disclaimer that I'm not here to be a narrator. I'm here to be, I'm the author of this story, you know, and I...
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna tell it the best that I can, and there's gonna be some parts I probably will forget right now. I may choose to leave some out today because that's just, it's heavy on my heart, and I think that shows us as more authentic and genuine people, because then when other people do decide to come forward and think it might be time to tell their story, they won't feel like they have to be, you know, to be able to do a TED talk in order to be able to tell, to share their story. I think it's just all about being real and admitting that, hey, this isn't easy. And it also, you know, and then take a deep breath, because it's not.
That's
and,
right.
You know, so I just think admitting that up front, we're not perfect. And, you know, we're just like everyone else. And if we want other people to come forward, we need to set the best example. And so I think it's important to admit that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let me say something before you leave, okay? That's very good. That's a good way of doing it, because I'll tell you why. When you go into, I've done many presentations. Bill was kind enough to put a few of them right on under primary volunteers. You can open that up on the website, and you'll see me at Centenary University and other places. But anyway, the point is this. If you're honest with people and you tell them how you feel, see, many times professors get up there and they're so stoned, they're so cold, they're so, what's the word I'm looking for? They're stiff, okay? And it's like they don't have any personality or any heart. I don't know. I've gone to this because I work with professors, all right? And whereas if you get up there and you're just another person who's sharing their life, but you care enough about the people that you're talking to to share your story because either they know someone who's gone through abuse or maybe they too have gone through abuse, and you're being so open and so vulnerable to them, they tend to respond to that in a very, very positive way.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's what I tell people, too. If you're going to go and do a presentation, just be yourself. Just be yourself.
Right. That's
right. And people love you for it. They do. Absolutely. They respond better. Okay, now let's go back to Lori, okay? And thank you for calling in, okay? I really appreciate that. And, you know, first time people call in, always call back second time. And they become a part of NASCA, and maybe they end up telling their story, and that's wonderful. And you can always tell your story here. This is a platform to do that, okay? So I'm giving you an invitation here. Okay, let's go to Lori up here and see if she has anything she'd like to say.
Yeah, well, I just agree with what you've been talking about there. And I mean, like, I know when I started doing Blog Talk Radio years ago, back in like 2009, I was like, I had no idea how long I'd be doing it, but I was just determined to share, you know, the truth about abuse and how damaging it is and how, you know, hurtful and hard it is on people. And I knew, you know, coming, you know, firsthand, I knew the trauma that people go through, and I thought, you know, I could be a voice too, right? And it, that's really what it was all about. And I thought, you know, the best thing to do is just be ourselves, because that's who we are. You know, I can't be somebody else, right?
That's
so
right.
I just, yeah. I mean, I was just like, you know, it's just me, and I'm just me, and you know, and I can't change that. So that kind of made me a little bit more comfortable instead of trying to be somebody that I'm not, you know, because that's who, you know, people are going to see me. They're going to know, you know, the real me. That's it. So, you know, I think it's just so important for people to realize, like, even if you don't want to go public with your story, some people don't, is just, you know, to reach out and get some help, because that's
Absolutely.
Why a lot of us are telling our stories, is so that other people will know you're not alone, you know, and there is help, there's hope, there's healing, and there's people that do care, you know, and that's just the thing. I mean, you know, a lot of us, I don't want to say all, but a lot of survivors of abuse hold this in for, you know, hold their trauma in, they don't tell anybody, you know, and they just suffer on their own. That's what I was doing for years until the age of 42, and you know, I thought, is this all there is to life? You know, is this all there is? Like, isn't there somebody out there that cares? But as soon as I started reaching out, all these hands started reaching back to me.
Mm-hmm.
All these
nice.
Survivors were like, yeah, they were like, you know, you can do this. And all these hands started reaching out to me. And so, including NASCA and NASCA members. And so, you know, this has been about 12 years now that I've been on my healing journey, but I'm quite a ways through it now. But when I first started, boy, I tell you, that was so comforting to have that support. So even if a person doesn't want to go public with their story, you don't have to. That's just entirely up to you. But just make sure that you don't suffer on your own. You know, I just wanted to
right.
sort of throw that in there. Yeah, because not everybody
yep,
wants
yeah.
to get on Blog Talk Radio and tell their story. But if, you know, if you do, there's a platform here for you. But the thing is make sure you don't suffer on your own. You know, there's
right.
groups out there, support groups, there's therapists, there's good people out there. You just have to keep searching until you find those people that can help you. And don't stop looking until you do. Yeah.
Right to that. Absolutely. We agree with you on that. One thing I want to get out there, too. All right, now this year is different. We all know this. Thank you for that, Lori. It's so, so, so true. Get the help you need. And don't be embarrassed about it, because the embarrassment and the shame is put in the wrong place, okay? You were the
mm-hmm.
victim, and now you're becoming a survivor, and then you become a thriver. And I don't like that word, thriver. You become a soldier. That's what I am. I consider myself a soldier. Listen, one thing that we do speak about, and I will speak about it really quickly because I want Sharon to have the last words here. But, all right, Thanksgiving is coming up. This year is different. But if you're going to have like three or four people, if it's a toxic people or person in there, every state is different, okay, as far as how many you can have in your home on Thanksgiving since it's coming up. But if there's a toxic person there who's going to ruin your day and trigger you or whatever the case might be in your family, in your own family where so much of the abuse happens, okay, you don't have to go. Remember that. I was asked this after a presentation I'd given. A lady, you know, approached me. And my advice to her was, if that person is going to, it's obviously they're bothering you already. And if they're going to make you feel really bad, you know, don't go. That's my advice to you. And if you have friends to go to instead, fine. Or even if you don't, I know of people, and I did this one year also. I went to a soup kitchen, and I was handing out meals and all this other stuff. And what a wonderful feeling that was. So there's other ways of doing it. But stay away from toxic people, okay, any day of the week, any month of the year. Okay, go ahead, Sharon. We have like 2 minutes left or something.
Yes. I second that or third or whatever. It's true. It's a good excuse this year, people. You know, sometimes it's hard to say no. This is a really good year to practice that, right? And to be able, you have a good reason to say, I'm sorry, but I'm just not able to come. So take care of yourself. Use it, you know, use it. I've talked to clients sometimes and they've said they've had a hard time saying no to certain things or family gatherings or to somebody. And I said, you know, I'm not one to support lying, but in this case, if that's what you need to do to say, I would love to come, but I'm really sorry, I have another engagement, go ahead and do that. But it's a good year to take care of yourself. And we started off tonight talking about generosity, thankfulness, and so on. And I really hope that anybody who's listening will take good care of themselves through this holiday season. Make good choices for yourself, whatever they are. Make a good choice with yourself being number one. And also to see what you have to share with somebody else. Maybe it's that bag of groceries. Maybe I love that buy one, get one free. That was such a great idea. Looking at coupons, doing what you can to make sure that somebody else does not go hungry during this really difficult time. And the other thing is I have a little saying that I always pull out of Thanksgiving. And I always invite my clients to do this because I always do this every Thanksgiving. And the saying is, let us be grateful to the people who make us happy. They are the charming gardeners who make our souls blossom. And so this Thanksgiving, to think about somebody in our life that has made our soul blossom, and to maybe do that ancient ritual of writing something in your own hand in a little note and sending them just a little note saying, I'm thankful that you're in my life. And I'm thankful that NASCA's in my life, and I'm thankful for all of you tonight. And what a long way we've come since I started my journey back in the 70s to where we are now. And I'm so grateful that NASCA is a place where we can all turn and share our stories or listen to other stories and heal and move toward recovery and strength. So happy Thanksgiving to everybody.
Well, thank you for that, Sharon. And that was wonderful. Mm-hmm. I like that. We all love that, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. And happy Thanksgiving to you, too. We had a very good show tonight, and I love it when people call in and we just speak our mind, you know, whatever's there. We may start out one place and end up at another and then go back like Sharon just did, which was good. And, of course, this is about Thanksgiving and giving and people being hungry, too, and how we can help our neighborhoods, okay, help our neighborhoods if we know of our people in the neighborhoods who are poor or who are homebound, whatever the case might be, okay. Be especially mindful of that. And with the coupons that you just came up with, and that was a wonderful idea. I have a paper out there. I'm going to look and see if you can get one one free. That's very good. Thank you for that. Okay, this show is over, okay? And we had a wonderful show, and thank you all for calling in. We will be back tomorrow. Tomorrow there will be a special guest, and I'll talk to you soon. I'll be back on Friday, I guess. So, good night, God bless, and stay safe.
Thank you.
Good
night, everybody.
Good night.
Good night.
Talk Radio.